You're tuned into the Palestine Solidarity Sessions, a special presentation of CKUT. In-depth interviews, voices, and analysis on what we can do as ordinary people to stand up for Palestine. For more information, visit ckut.ca/news. Joined on the line right now with Omar Barghouti, who is a founding member of the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, and also PACB, which is the Palestinian Academic and Cultural Boycott Initiative. He's a Palestinian activist, and he's joining us on the line today from Jerusalem. Omar, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So to begin, let's talk a little bit about PACB. As we said, the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. Tell us what PACB is.
PACB was founded in 2004 by a group of Palestinian academics, intellectuals, and artists as a result of an analysis that Israel's takeover, reoccupation of the West Bank, reinvasion of West Bank cities and refugee camps, and the mass destruction that that had brought, including the massacre in a refugee camp in Jenin in the north of the West Bank, that Israel was acting with criminal impunity, and that the world under U.S. hegemony was just watching and unable to hold Israel to account. At the same time, Israeli academic institutions, Israeli cultural institutions were playing a major role, have always played a major role in justifying those crimes committed against the Palestinians, rationalizing them and presenting them to the world in a way that that keeps Israel's false image of being a democracy and a vibrant society and so on and so forth. So we decided in 2004 to hold those institutions to account because of their complicity in all aspects of Israel's regime of oppression against the Palestinian people, which, according to our analysis, constitutes occupation, settler colonialism, as well as apartheid.
So looking at the current assault in Gaza, which Israel is, of course, dubbed as Operation Protective Edge, how has this highlighted some of the links, as you just mentioned, between Israeli academia and the Israeli war machine?
The complicity of the Israeli academia in particular is so deep and multi-layered in every aspect of Israel's oppression against the Palestinians, including the current massacre. The role that the Israeli academia plays is very, very profound. Just as an example, the very doctrine used currently by the Israeli occupation forces in their massacre in Gaza, against our people in Gaza, is a doctrine that was developed at Tel Aviv University, specifically at the Institute of National and Strategic Studies at Tel Aviv University. In long workshops with the army, with the military industries and government, Tel Aviv University produced this doctrine called the Dahiya Doctrine. Dahiya refers to the southern suburb of Beirut. This doctrine is also known to be the doctrine of disproportionate force. What this doctrine basically says is that since Israel cannot effectively defeat irregular resistance forces like Hamas and other Palestinian resistance forces, the most effective way to combat them is by intensively hurting the civilian population, damaging civilian infrastructure, and bringing a lot of pain to the civilian population, enough that they will act on Israel's behalf and pressure the resistance to stop. This extremely criminal, extremely fascist-leaning doctrine that openly calls for collective punishment of a civilian population was developed at Tel Aviv University. Tel Aviv University prides itself for developing tens of weapon systems used by the Israeli army against Palestinians. Similarly, Technion, the technical institute in Israel, has developed a lot of the weapons, especially the drone technology used in targeting Palestinians and killing a disproportionately high number of Palestinian civilians. Close to 85% of all Palestinians who were murdered in the current massacre by Israel are civilians, men, women, and children. Now we're talking about more than 1,950 Palestinians have been murdered in just a little over a month, and about 10,000 injured. Thousands of homes were destroyed, hundreds of factories, schools, universities, hospitals, ambulances, churches, mosques, and so on. So the Israeli universities are deeply involved in this, and not just in providing the weapons and the doctrines used, but in whitewashing the crime, in presenting Israel as a democracy, as a country defending itself, so to speak, ignoring that a regime of oppression has no claim to self-defense, to maintain its oppression. When you occupy someone, when you go into someone's home and you take over half or three quarters of their home and they start resisting you, you have no legal, moral, or political claim to self-defense. You're occupying their home, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. So the Israeli university, the Israeli institutions of higher learning, as well as cultural institutions, have played an extremely important role in covering up and whitewashing Israel's crimes against the Palestinians.
We've also sadly heard the term genocide used quite a bit to describe this current assault on the Gaza Strip, not only from people who have been condemning Israel's actions, but also, as has been highlighted by Electronic Intifada and other news sources throughout the last few weeks, calls coming from high up within the Israeli government for genocide. But I want to focus on the statement of one Israeli academic, Dr. Mordechai Kedar from Bar-Ilan mm-hmm. University. It was a statement made, I guess, just before the assault on Gaza started. But he said, and this is to quote him, "The only thing that can deter terrorists, like those who kidnapped the children and killed them," of course, the children who were kidnapped just before this assault began, "is the knowledge that their sister or mother will be raped." And this statement, of course, drew quite a lot of media attention, as an Israeli academic essentially calling for the rape of Palestinian women. And I'm wondering, are statements like this, is this an anomaly, or is this kind of thinking something that we see throughout Israeli academia?
Actually, this is quite mild compared to Israeli mainstream opinions, public opinions, and expressions of such opinions on the Palestinians. Yes, he's a ranking academic, but he's certainly no fringe element in society. He's very close to the mainstream. In fact, those much higher than him, much more at the center of the Israeli mainstream, have called for much, much worse crimes, like genocide. Ranking officers in the Likud, the ruling Likud party in their parliamentary bloc. In fact, the deputy prime minister of Israel has called for not just ethnic cleansing, but acts of genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. One of the highest leaders of the Jewish Home, a fascist-leaning party in the Israeli government, a very strong party in the Israeli government, has openly called for killing the mothers of Palestinian fighters and militants, because that's the only way to prevent them from bearing snakes, giving birth to snakes, as she put it. You've got to kill the snake, but you've got to kill the mother as well, because that's the mother who's responsible for giving birth to such snakes. And she's not just a ranking professor at a major university in Israel. This woman is the second in command in the Jewish Home, a major party that's in government. But again, Feiglin, who's the deputy prime minister, has openly called for acts of genocide, ethnic cleansing and acts of genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. The dehumanization of the Palestinian, reducing us to relative humans, humans only in the relative sense, not full humans who deserve full equal rights, has gone completely totally mainstream without any facades. Israeli society has always been racist, deeply racist, as any colonial society. It's nothing genetic to the Israelis. It's just as a colonial society that's imposing apartheid, colonial rule, ethnic cleansing on a weaker indigenous population. Racism is natural to them. It comes with the system, so to speak. But it has never been so blatant, so in your face as it is now.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you specifically about, you know, some of the connections with Israeli academia and Canada. Of course, you've been over to Montreal on a few occasions. You've toured around Canada and lectured for events, Israeli Apartheid Week and other such conferences. Can you tell us, like, in your time here in Canada, what were some of the links that you saw between Canadian academic institutions and Israeli ones?
Most academic institutions in Canada, or most of the prestigious ones at least, maintain very deep connections of complicity with Israeli universities that are involved in planning, implementing, whitewashing, and justifying Israel's regime of occupation, colonialism, and apartheid. So they are deeply involved in a way. You cannot just say, oh, I have this nanotechnology research with Technion, ignoring that Technion, excuse me, ignoring that Technion is also developing weapon systems for an army that's criminal, that's committing war crimes and crimes against humanity. Partnering with such institutions is complicity because it gives them a cover. It gives them a way to whitewash their crimes. So University of Toronto, York University, McGill, you name it, most of the prestigious universities in Canada have exchange programs with Israel, have joint research programs with Israeli universities, and therefore help in whitewashing those universities' crimes. Now, Martin Luther King Jr. said something very profound. He said, boycott at a very basic level is withdrawing support for an evil system or policy. Martin Luther King Jr. said that boycott at a very basic level is withdrawing support for an evil system or policy. When you think about it, what Martin Luther is telling us, this is not heroic. Withdrawing support, cutting your complicity in crime, is not heroic. It's a profound moral obligation. So when we ask Canadian universities to cut their institutional links with Israeli universities that are on record, we have a long record that proves their complicity in crimes, we're not asking Canadian universities for anything heroic. We're asking them for basic human decency, the basic moral obligation to do no harm. Currently, by having those links of complicity, they are doing harm. They're lending their names, they're lending their respectable reputation to covering up Israel's universities' involvement in crimes against humanity and war crimes and violations of human rights. We need that to stop. Many student campaigns, many faculty campaigns on Canadian campuses have done exactly that, targeting those links of complicity and calling for divestment, calling for BDS, as happened in some student councils, to break those links of complicity.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that's a perfect segue to my last question, turning now to what people here in academic institutions in Canada can do to stand in solidarity with Palestine. We're talking about academic boycotts. So what can those boycott campaigns look like, either from students or from faculty, from professors here in Canada?
The first thing I want to say is that solidarity with the people of Palestine in our quest for freedom, justice, and equality today is a three-letter word. It's BDS. It's boycott, divestment, and sanctions. We cannot understand solidarity that doesn't go after the root causes of oppression and breaks the links of complicity with those roots of oppression. So in the academic environment in Canada, we're very proud of our Canadian partners who are working for divestment from companies, international, Israeli, Canadian companies that are involved in the occupation, in the colonies, in the ethnic cleansing, in the war on Gaza, the massacre, and so on. We're also very proud of the work done by faculty for Palestine, Students Against Israeli Apartheid, queers against Israeli apartheid, and many groups in Canada that are working very well and very strategically on Canadian campuses to educate about Palestinian rights, to educate about Israel's system of oppression, and most importantly, to break the links of complicity through divestment, through boycott of Israeli universities. Many academics in Canada today will no longer go to conferences held at Israeli universities because they say, I don't want to lend my name to such a university that's involved in crime. And it's beginning to look like the South African days, the last decade of apartheid, when most decent academics around the world, including in Canada, would not go and lecture or attend a conference in South Africa under apartheid, because doing so, regardless what the excuse may have been, might have been, would have been a kind of complicity in whitewashing apartheid. Similarly, today, not boycotting Israel, coming to conferences to Israeli universities, doing joint research with them, joint exchange programs, scholars exchange or student exchange programs, is complicity, is involvement in protecting and whitewashing crimes, and that needs to stop. So I think the most effective way is to start at home. People who want to stand with the Palestinians do not need to come to the occupied territories and help us with our struggle here. The struggle is right in Canada, in Montreal, at every university, at McGill, and so on, breaking the links of complicity, not to mention the biggest form of complicity, the Canadian government.
Mm-hmm. And finally, what are some inspiring recent victories that we've seen with PACB, with the academic boycott campaign?
There are too many to enumerate right now, but in the last number of months, we've seen the cultural and academic boycott really growing into the mainstream. A couple of months ago, Danny Glover, the famous Hollywood star, A-list star, endorsed a cultural boycott of Israel. During the massacre in Gaza, towards the beginning of the massacre in July, we issued a statement calling for a military embargo on Israel to stop the massacre. That statement was signed by 6 Nobel Peace laureates, as well as 100 of the most prominent figures in academia, in culture, in the arts world, writers, filmmakers, and so on and so forth. It was just so impressive, so heartening to see such wide support for a very important sanction, which is the military embargo, that Israel has to be stopped by stopping selling arms to Israel, buying arms from Israel, and doing any military research with Israel. And of course, even before the massacre in Gaza, the BDS movement grew tremendously, affecting pension funds, banks, and so on. But I'm sure you'll address that in another episode of this program, addressing the BDS movement in general, which PACB is only a tiny part of. So academic and cultural boycott connects with economic boycott. When you hurt the brand Israel, that hurts the products of Israel. Their possibility of selling abroad becomes much, much less. And this is the main lesson we learned from the South African anti-apartheid movement, which I proudly was part of, a tiny part of, when I went to school at Columbia University in New York. Then our obsession was with hurting the brand South Africa so that people would not buy South Africa and would not invest in South Africa. Just South Africa looks like something very toxic. We're approaching that level with Israel. In most of Europe, in most of the global South, and increasingly in the United States and Canada, Israel's brand is becoming more and more toxic. Our partners on Canadian campuses are helping tremendously in pushing that forth.
Mm-hmm. Again, we've been speaking with Omar Barghouti, who is one of the founding members of the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, as well as PACB, the Palestinian Academic and Cultural Boycott Initiative. He was joining us on the line today from Jerusalem in Palestine. Omar, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
You just heard the Palestine Solidarity Sessions, a special presentation of CKUT Radio. For more information on this series, or to download other segments, visit ckut.ca/news. Follow us on Twitter at CKUT News with the hashtag CKUT Palestine, or email news@ckut.ca. for weekly in-depth coverage on Palestine and Palestine solidarity initiatives. Tune in to Under the Olive Tree, Thursdays at 11 a.m., or follow them on Facebook. We wish you all a free, free Palestine.